This morning in North Carolina, wheels are spinning. Determination is winning. A passion is now a thriving business, and it shows no signs of slowing down. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one Clint Spiegel had with First Horizon Bank about starting a bike wheel manufacturing facility in Asheville. Now it's not just talk, it's rubber meets road. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Clint. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
All week, all year, it's all college football on Chuck Oliver Show. And I always use our engineer, our man on the ones and twos, David, as sort of a informal age definer. Like, David's either old enough to know this or he's too young. David's 29. Is that right, 29? All right, I got it right. That might be the age where if you've never bought a car directly from the lot, it's a lot like what signing day has morphed into. Here's what I'm talking about directly from the lot. Like, David's 29. Dan, what are you, 35?
37. I appreciate the handicap
there. All right. So maybe Dan experienced it or watched it at one point, or he sat in the car while his dad did grown man work. Because children and ladies, please, we're buying a car. Honey, what color do you want? That literally was the input. If you never bought a car directly from the lot, this is what I'm talking about. Like, David's 29. He drives a Mustang. He bought it 2-3 years ago. If 2 or 3 years from now he buys a new car, do you know what David did 2 or 3 years ago that he's going to do 2 or 3 years from now? And until something changes, he's going to do every time he buys a car? David went online and went, I want a Mustang, and I want a 6-liter, and I want leather, and I want this. Enter. And if he was at a dealership website, he went, there it is. And there's a price. And it's like, how much do you have for a down payment? $1,800. Oh, here's your – do you want it? You can come by today. In 30 minutes, it'll be waiting on you. It'll be washed. David, is that pretty damn close to
– Yeah, that's pretty much how it went.
Okay. Well, I live in modern days. Now, I drive my car until, like, the DOT says, sir, come on. But, like, I've got a 2015 GMC Acadia right now. It's fabulous. It replaced a 2006 Toyota 4Runner that I put 179,000 miles. So that's what I do. But multiple times in my life, and I remember watching my dad do this again, I didn't help. And my mom, please, children and ladies, wait in the car. It's like gambling. You don't know what you're doing. If you never bought a car directly from the lot, here's what you did. You drove to the lot, parked off to the side, started walking around looking as much as you could before the salesperson descended upon you, and then the dance started. And it essentially was, well, how much do you have to spend? Well, what's the least I can spend? Well, how much do you have? Well, how much will this get? And you just this little, like, standoff waiting for somebody to draw on the price. And it was so much theater, but there was this final little deal that would always happen because you've been dealing with, like, you know, Roy Ed, the sales guy. What can I help you with? Oh, do you want the Arctic Blue? You've been dealing with the sales guy. And so y'all would haggle back and forth, and you were saying, I don't want the undercarriage protection, and I don't want to have to pay $350 for dealer and destination, and I don't want any dealer prep. So you would literally be in the sales guy's office arguing about down to a couple of $100s. And then someone you had not seen before, he'd say, I don't know, I'm going to see what I can do. And so the sales guy that you've been dealing with for about 3 hours, he leaves. You're talking about, I don't know, $400. And then somebody you've never seen in your life comes in. I'm Gene, the sales manager. Who's trying to steal a car? He walk in with his palms up. That's a lot different than David, the 29-year-old, going online and going, I want a Mustang with 6 cylinders. Enter. Folks, This is what recruiting and name, image, likeness has become. This kid, Nicholas Harbor, the really good-looking four-star athlete out of the D.C. area, this is what it's like. He has no concept of this. In fact, there's a chance that his mama and daddy don't have any concept of what buying a car straight off the lot was. It's exactly what apparently is going on right now. It is a last minute. Hey, now, South Carolina, look, I'm not trying to put pressure on you. And South Carolina is back to make one final offer. This is the kind of stuff that used to happen with, like, you know, my mom's brother, he's handling all this. Look, I just want to get this over with and signing day, and so I'll be at the gym at 2:30. Uncle Roy, who am I signing with? You're signing with Ole Miss. Okay, I'm signing. Ole Miss, here I come, Rebels. Now, it's out there. This is, in some way, a recruit. It's like an elimination bracket for my services. Under Armour versus Nike, and now versus whoever. Dan, find the business patron. Is it Bilo? I don't know. Find the business patron saint of South Carolina athletics. And we're on Barry's Places in South Carolina. I apologize to everybody in Palmetto State. I'm supposed to know that. Like, aren't you supposed to know that, like, you know, Phil Knight is Oregon? I'm supposed to be saying this is a recruit who first decided between Maryland and Oregon is now deciding between Oregon and South Carolina. That's not what it is. He's deciding between Under Armour and Nike. Nike, you win. And then it'll like South Carolina and whatever their name, image, likeness is, and I don't know who their ace in the hole is. But you just lost the running back from that area, apparently, to name, image, likeness. He's out at USC now. And I'm looking forward to seeing him play next year. But this is supposed to be last minute. It's down to Clemson and Georgia. Where will the kid go? I talked about Crow taking a bulldog out from under the table and putting it. Dan, do you remember? Was it Southern Cal and Texas or Oklahoma, whoever? Bama, maybe?
Talking about for Isaiah Crowell?
Yeah. At the very end, and he pulled a bulldog out. I was like, fantastic. Well done, young man. That was just, you know what Crow was deciding on? Crow was deciding on either, it's close to home and my mom can see me. That used to be a real thing. When I say used to, I mean like 3 years ago. And we all grow up and we now live in the adult world. I mean, let Alice go to Wonderland. Okay. I get it. We're
watching the video right now. Bama, Auburn, and Georgia.
There you go. Bama, Auburn, and Georgia. Oh, he's from Columbus. That's right, wasn't he? And so Auburn's right there. Yeah, so I remember that. But he pulls the bulldog out, and I'm going to Georgia. I was like, clever. But, you know, part of it, well, like, I just said Auburn. Well, you know, he went to school in Columbus, and Auburn's right there. That was a thing. It's not a thing anymore. So this is supposed to be, you know, we're talking about why did he choose the school? Now, there are cases. I don't know this, but there was a five-star recruit out of the city of Miami or one of the high schools around Miami. And this is probably 10 years ago. And what I was told by people who don't know each other and had competing interests, but I heard people don't know each other, I heard the exact same thing. Mom and dad are not together. Mom took a payoff from one school. Dad took a payoff from another. Signing day, kid's like, I don't know what to do because kid didn't get anything. Do you know what can happen now? At least it can be some documentation. Jaden Rashada, weren't we just told? Hell, he has signed. I hope that whatever Jaden Rashada has now been, you know, wedged into, name, image, likeness wise, I hope the whole story just goes away. I've said this is not about return on investment. This is about winning football games. And I mean, I can always back, like, you talk about brand loyalty. You know what I did about 2 months ago? And by the way, highly recommend it. Honestly, tweet the King CFB account. I'll put the picture on there. Sugar-free Belgian waffles, fantastic. Not a gram of sugar. Tastes just like you get at the Ritz on the brunch. But I bought a Hamilton Beach waffle iron. Do you know why I bought Hamilton Beach waffle iron? Do you know? 1972 or three. I don't know. I was like 5 years old. Hamilton Beach hired Joe Namath to endorse their air popcorn popper thing 50 years ago. And I was like, oh, okay. I like that company because they have Joe Namath 50 years ago. And I'm looking for a waffle iron. I'm like, oh, yeah, but Hamilton Beach. Even when it was Joe Namath, do you know what Hamilton Beach was after? Moving product, selling units. That's all it was about. They picked Joe Namath back 50 years ago because they thought he'd help sell units. And they were right. Do you know why athletes are getting name, image, likeness deals today? So that I can win football games. Hamilton Beach could say we got the popcorn popper, we got the toaster, the waffle iron, we got the toasters, we got all the... And so let's look at the increase in units, especially in the New York area. And yeah, they could do all of this stuff to extrapolate out and see. So spending this much on Joe Namath equaled Hamilton Beach turned a profit. Or Michael Jordan with Nike. Or... Who, I don't know, who's Steph Curry endorse? Pepsi? Whoever.
Under Armour.
So you look at this and you try to draw a direct line, and for years and decades, it was always about return on investment. Do you know this is the first time in my life that I've ever seen this is not about return on investment? I have a business expenditure to try to get a sports outcome. Like Milo's tea, I don't know if Bo Nix helped him move product. I know that if it was 10 years ago and Milo's decided to have, I don't know, Richard Todd or someone endorse Milo's, it would have been about, and if we sign Richard for this many thousands of dollars, will we make that times 2.5 back? Because that's our, or whatever the formula is. With Bo Nix, it was like, hey, we're an Auburn company. Let's try to, yeah, we would love to sell tea. Trust us. We want to keep our quarterback. Tank Bigsby, the thought cloud, like in a cartoon. Tank didn't even say the words. Tank didn't have to. There was a thought bubble above Tank's head. I've heard others talk about the trend. Tank, would you like a new name, image, likeness deal? Oh, I would. Thank you. He didn't even have to say the words. This is what buying a car directly from the lot. David, I actually feel sorry for you a little bit. If you never watched that dance or took part in it yourself, it was like a 4-hour ordeal. Now we walk in with the internet and says, it says this car is $27,038. I want it. You can be gone in a half hour with a brand new car and they got your old one. Now, in the case of like Nicholas Harbor or whomever represents him or whatever name, image, likeness he's trying to parlay this stuff into, God bless you. Put your sticky fingers out there. Grab every dollar you can. It's allowed. Go get yours. It is hard to tell really how much is, look, I'll listen to one more offer, and how much is like bull spit to sort of goose the final amount. It's like a car deal. It's a really, really new day when it comes to signing. But like I said, there are just blatant, in full view of everybody, financial deals that are determining where recruits sign. And so that was one of the two things the NCAA said. Don't reward play on the field and don't use it for recruiting. And that was never even a chance that it wouldn't happen. All right, we're going to break, come back, continue next.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Nine states, 56 sticks. We talk college football. Appreciate y'all making that blessing possible. I saw snow in Cairo. I was not there, but I turned on my TV. Maybe this was about 2014-ish or so. You could Google your computer and find out. But I turned on the TV one morning. I was like, oh, it's snowing in Cairo. All right. That's, I guess, something I've never seen. There's a college football headline today that tops it. Do we realize that two football seasons ago, I think the number was seven, Ole Miss played Alabama. And over the course of Alabama's possessions that night, Ole Miss gave up every possible yard it could except for seven. Alabama had 723 yards of total offense. There were only 7 yards that Ole Miss's defense. That was 2 years ago. Today, Ohio State has taken a cornerback from Oxford. So there you go, man. That's the transfer portal. Want to welcome on right now a guy who knows all about college football and the transfer portal, bringing him on from 247. It is Chris Hummer. Brother, how you doing today?
Doing well, man. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, let's talk about just the weirdness of what college football is today. Ohio State is looking at Ole Miss's defense for help, and everybody was a little bit jealous. Georgia maybe wanted to get involved. A lot of folks were thinking about this kid. Talk about the transfer, because this is as big news as anything on signing day for Ohio State.
Yeah, they landed Davison. I'm not going to try to pronounce his last name, but he is a cornerback from Ole Miss. He was a true freshman All-American for a lot of people this year. And Ole Miss's defense, like I know you're referencing that Alabama game from 2 years ago, but it was much better this year, top 50 unit in college football. And Davison was considered the future of the unit. He went in the transfer portal. He was a former four-star recruit. And given how much he played as a true freshman, he was one of the most sought-after players in the country. Ohio State was battling Michigan, Tennessee, UCLA, Texas A&M for him. They won out. Ohio State has a lot of playing time to offer at cornerback. Yep. They really only have one established starter coming back right now off a defense that got lit up by Georgia in the semifinal this year. So Ohio State definitely needed the help, and now they have two of the best five defensive backs in the transfer portal heading to Columbus.
Let's talk a little bit more about defensive backs. Tony Grimes was a five-star kid that I think Virginia had canceled their high school season. He's like, you know what, I'll go play college football early. Some folks were wondering if he'd be in the NFL now. He's actually in College Station.
Yeah, Tony had a pretty up-and-down career at North Carolina, I would say. He was part of a defense that got lit up week after week. But Tony was a bright spot in that unit at times, and he's still – got a ton of potential, and Texas A&M really needed instant impact cornerbacks, and they added him to their class. I think he's a pretty strong addition for the Aggies. They've only really added a couple players in the transfer portal, with two of them being DBs. They also brought in Sam McCall, yep, Florida State, former top 50 recruit himself. So the Aggies got a lot better in the secondary, and I think they returned 17 starters this year, so that roster should be in position to rebound. I emphasize should, because you never – quite know what's going on in College Station with that, but Tony Grimes is a big addition for them.
What can Trey Knox be in Columbia, South Carolina? Because, man, I've talked about the kid nonstop since he was a freshman. I was like, there really is something there, I swear. He's going with his tight ends coach, right?
Yeah, with Al Loggins. Definitely needed, because South Carolina lost both of its starting tight ends to the transfer portal, one going to Florida State, one going to Oklahoma. I don't know really who got the better end of that. Trey is a very talented kid. Arkansas is certainly a loser here, but South Carolina desperately needed him. He should be a heavily used target by Spencer Rattler next year. He is a band-aid over a big hole for South Carolina at that position. So I think given the circumstances, he was one of the bigger additions in the transfer portal in the SEC. I think he's a really nice piece for the offense of the Gamecocks.
Devin Leary, can he be Will Levis minus the turnovers?
I think if you look at Devin Leary's career, he's probably not going to be Will Levis minus the turnovers. Just look at his stats at NC State. He's the type of passer who's pretty aggressive, pushing the ball downfield. I'll be interested to see how he fits in Liam Cohen's offense. He does have a lot of the traits Will Levis has as a passer, not quite as athletic and not quite as strong of an arm, but perhaps a little more responsible with the football and a little better in the short to intermediate throws. You'll hear a lot of that with Will Levis going in NFL draft time. Teams complaining about his inability to be accurate on the short and intermediate levels. Will Levis is probably slightly more developed passer, but either way, pretty natural replacement. A huge boon for Kentucky that really didn't have a lot there if Devin Leary wasn't stepping in and he should be one of the 20 best quarterbacks in college football next year, and that's big for Kentucky because they're having to replace one.
Wrapping up with today's Truist reporter, Chris Hummer, national college football writer, transfer portal guy from CBSSports.com. Chris, as much as I'm an Auburn grad, as much as I complained about the offensive line for like the last 6 years, I want to talk about all the transfers on defense, the big kid from Kentucky, the one big linebacker, the other big linebacker. Just talk about some of the thumpers they brought in from the SEC, no less.
Yeah, I think Auburn had two pretty immediate priorities in the portal, which was get there on both sides of the line of scrimmage. You mentioned the offensive linemen. Defensively, I think they brought in four defensive line transfers. If there's anything about Auburn, even when they were a little down, it's that they always seem to have a great defensive line, a great front seven, something that you could hang your hat on, something that carried the team even when the offense was struggling. They haven't had that in recent seasons, so beefing up that defensive line was huge. And then they also brought in several linebacker transfers. DeMario Tolvin coming over from LSU is the one that really stands out. Yep. Former four-star recruit, somebody that LSU definitely did not want to lose. So Auburn had to get better in the front seven defensively, and they made it a priority in the portal.
All right, brother, I appreciate the input. It is a big day for signing, but it's also so much activity in the portal. It's so important. Thank you for coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
He is today's Truist reporter. That is Chris Hummer, CBSSports.com. And then it's even more, I would say, and it is, I was more critical what Auburn has done on the offensive line. I say critical because this is just the truth about football. If a defensive lineman doesn't do his job, then somebody on the next level, the linebacker, has to make the tackle. The linebacker doesn't do his job, somebody on the next level has to make his tackle. If nobody even on the third level does his job, what happens? Worst outcome is 6 points for the opponent. If the offensive line doesn't do his job, quarterback gets hurt. And at the very least, the quarterback gets hit, which I view as the exact same. Don't hit my quarterback. He may get hurt. Football is that simple. It is. It's math. Make sure I have enough guys. However many that is, you have to figure out how many enough. Job one, protect the quarterback. Job two, three, four, five, seven, 15, 38 is hit the other guy's quarterback. So it's even more impressive what they've done on the offensive line. Just big, big additions.
This morning in North Carolina, wheels are spinning. Determination is winning. A passion is now a thriving business. And it shows no signs of slowing down. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one Clint Spiegel had with First Horizon Bank about starting a bike wheel manufacturing facility in Asheville. Now it's not just talk, it's rubber meets road. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Clint. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Wednesday on the Chuck Oliver Show, and it's signing day, and I'm not at a sports bar with a few hundred people. I broadcast about 10 years ago one signing day. I was at the College Football Hall of Fame for the entire whole big day event. I think it was like 125 kids signed scholarships that day. Like, I remember Arden Key was there. So it's like more than 100 kids signing scholarships. That's not even what it is, man. There aren't 100 kids left. It was in downtown Atlanta. There might not be 100 kids who, and I'm saying where it's an actual scholarship where you go to school for free. Okay? Like, not NAIA, not taking anything away. I don't think there's 100 kids left in the state of Georgia. But that's going to change, I promise you. I went ahead and told you earlier today, within 2, 3, 4 years, at some point, we're going to have one signing day, and that's just what it's going to be. When it comes to Georgia Bulldogs, Cruton, the team, everything else, I want to welcome on now from Rivals, from UGASports.com, it's Jed May. How you doing, man?
Good, man. How are you? It's like you said, it's definitely not the not the kind of national signing days we've been used to in years past, but still a big day on the college football calendar, nevertheless.
Yeah, so there are still a lot of kids. For Georgia, that's mostly accounting and housekeeping and whatever else. They've got 18 kids who were early enrollees. They have seven who have signed letters of intent. There was only one kid, as I see, Jamal Merriweather, who was a commit. That happened back in December, and he has not signed. There is a story there, I'm sure. What is it?
Nothing, nefarious or anything like that. His was a commitment that evolved really late. He was committed to UCF, and Georgia swooped in. I think he committed to Georgia, maybe not even a full week before signing day. So didn't sign then. He's going to sign with Georgia today and be a part of this class. I think it'll be this afternoon sometime. Yep. Like you said, this early signing day, Georgia has, with Jamal, is 26 commits, 24 of them at the time signed on early signing day. Raymond Cottrell was committed at the time. It's now flipped to Texas A&M. But that's just the nature of how things are now. More and more kids are early enrolling and being around for spring practice, which obviously gives you a leg up heading into your freshman season. So now you get here to today, and there's Jamal Merriweather, and then Georgia has tight end target Deuce Robinson, who may not even sign or commit today, as he's obviously kind of weighing. He's got baseball options that he's weighing as well. Yeah, things are weirdly quiet on the Georgia front today.
And that's one of the things I was kind of referring to. When I said there's a story, it could be the baseball draft. It could be – and I mentioned this actually earlier in the program. I said some kids still want to do the after school, let's meet in the gym, and I'm going to put hats on the table. Some kids just still want to kind of, have that traditional sort of experience. Let's talk the bigger story, at least for a lot of programs. And Kirby and the Dogs are going to be no different. A lot of talent swinging out of the portal door. Some talent will swing in. Let's talk about some of the kids that they have lost. I heard all season that if they can just get A.D. Mitchell on the field and healthy and right and practicing, boy, what a difference maker. And I looked at him, I was like, all right, I buy it. He is now in the portal and landed at Texas. Let's talk about that wide receiver position, because Georgia obviously brought in two studs themselves. Any comment about Ra-Ra and his situation? The talent of him and Lovett is undeniable. They just got two big game breakers in from the SEC.
Yeah, obviously. You mentioned A.D. Mitchell being a difference maker. It doesn't get more difference making than catching a touchdown in every college football playoff game he ever played in. So, Georgia has a lot of talent at the receiver position. I think as an overall receiver position, I think you look at that X receiver, which is kind of the bigger guys, the more physical types. Marcus Roseme Jackson is there. Ra-Ra Thomas could fill that role, although he's dealing with his off the field issues, and we're not exactly sure how things are going to evolve there. But then you look outside of that, there's not a whole lot of proven depth as far as those big guys on the outside. There's a freshman, Tyler Williams, who's about 6'4", 210, 215. He could battle for some playing time there. If Deuce Robinson were to come to Georgia, he's basically a receiver tight end hybrid that could fill that role a little as well. But I think, Dominic Lovett transferred in. He's more of an explosive slot guy. We've all seen what Ladd McConkey can do. Arian Smith as well when he's on the field. So there's talent in that receiver room. It's just when you really break it down into that X receiver, the big guys, George Pickens kind of filled that X role when he was in Athens. That's kind of the one part of the receiver room that's a little more improving, but we'll see how that all shakes out through the spring.
Just personal wonderment here. Where do you think Dominic Blaylock may land? Because sometimes a kid, like Miles Brennan jumped in the portal, and I was like, where's he going to land? And a buddy of mine's like, he ain't getting the offers he wanted. I really am pulling for Dominic because he was a big-time talented kid who had an injury and then another injury and then the depth chart. Now there's like 18-year-olds past him on the depth chart. What do you think? How does this play out for him?
Yeah, it's hard not to root for that guy just with all he's been through. He's a real class act. I spoke with him in the locker room after the national championship, and you could tell just winning another ring and actually being a contributing factor in this season, maybe more so than he was in 2021, definitely meant a lot to him. So, I think he's a talented enough guy to land at a Power 5 school and get a fresh start somewhere. Obviously, he's going to be one of the older guys on the team no matter where he ends up, but I think that's going to be an attractive skill set for coaches out there, a guy that can play the slot, he can play outside, and he's got a lot of experience and a lot of winning under his belt at a school like Georgia too.
All right. Is Kirby going to have to replace his offensive coordinator? Is Todd Monken going to leave?
You know, it yeah, that's the biggest excitement of signing day, right, is the Todd Monken watch. Right now, I think if you made me put money on it, I'd probably bet that he stays. I think he likes the stability in Athens. He obviously has settled in nicely and has developed, a good rapport with Kirby Smart Company. And you look at the Buccaneers job as one that he's been rumored for. Obviously, Tom Brady retired today. There's a lot of, uncertainty there. They've got salary cap situations, and it's an older team. So, he kind of knows what's going on in Athens. He's involved in quarterback recruiting and all those kind of things. So, if I was betting today, I bet he ends up in Athens. But it's definitely a situation to keep an eye on over the next week. It would be a huge loss, no question about it.
All right. I don't think I'm being overspeaking here. There was a day not too long ago where Nick Saban could knock any SEC team in the conference, basically, and say, hey, I'm here for your coordinator, your strength coach, your recruiting one. There's a lot of talk about Glenn Schumann because he needs a defensive coordinator over there. Is Kirby going to have to replace his DC? Because I don't think it's a better job now.
Yeah, and I think Glenn Schumann, I mean, when you look at Kirby Smart's defensive coordinators, they all leave to go be head coaches, right? I mean, Mel Tucker went from Georgia to Colorado, is now obviously at Michigan State. Dan Lanning went to Oregon. I think that's where Schumann is. I think he's a guy who his next step is to go be a head coach somewhere. So, I mean, you could say, he's an Alabama guy. It would be his, quote-unquote, his show. He wouldn't be a co-coordinator over there. But, just like Kirby Smart's got his hands in the defense of Georgia, Nick Saban's got his fingerprints all over the defense in Tuscaloosa, right? So, for more or less a lateral move, I wouldn't really see Glenn Schumann taking that. So I think he ends up in Athens. And no, I'm making no mistake, he's a fast rising star. I expect him to really start getting some head coaching opportunities in the next couple of years, but I don't see him leaving to take that coordinator job over in Tuscaloosa.
All right, this is kind of tongue in cheek, but Kirby doesn't think of. I promise you, Kirby is wondering about this. How do you approach the team this year? Because that, are you satisfied? And they're like, oh, 15-0. They backed it up with another one. It's really hard to get like an angle, like a viewpoint on this season. You can't play the disrespect card. And Kirby, I bet, obsesses about this.
I think if anyone could play the disrespect card when you think you can, it would be Kirby Smart. And we all the sound bites are famous now, right? The players saying they were going to, people thought they were going to go 5-7 and all that.
Yeah, 29-1.
So, yeah, exactly. So, it's interesting because Kirby's mentioned this because last year the mantra was, okay, we lost so much off that defense and the team as a whole. These guys stepping up are unproven. That's not as much the case this year. A lot of your defensive guys come back. Offensive skill players are back. You got to replace Stetson Bennett, obviously, but there's a lot more, I guess, proven talent coming back. So, I think your motivation is history. There hadn't been a college football threepeat, and I think it's what, since the 30s in Minnesota or something like that. So, last year was do something that the 2021 team couldn't do, win the SEC. Go undefeated. And I think this year it's going to be the same thing. Do something that no one has done in, 90 years or so and win 3 in a row. Something Nick Saban hasn't done. Pete Carroll didn't do at USC. Barry Switzer, all these great coaches in college football. No, none of them have done it in that long. So that's kind of the, make your real mark on history this year is, I think, going to be the motivation.
Last thing, Jed May covers UGA, all of it, for Rivals, UGASports.com. This is not a softball, so, it's easy to treat Georgia Tech football like a pinata. But, scale of 1 to 10 or 1 to 100, if you want to make a point, where is the, even, casting an eye towards the Yellow Jackets program? Because even though it's a different conference, Clemson is supposed to be a little concerned with South Carolina, Louisville and Kentucky are supposed to. I don't think that there has ever in my lifetime been a bigger gulf. It's not even like Georgia Tech is doing the same things the Dogs are right now. Where do you think that relationship is?
It's so funny because that game has been such a farce almost on the field at times in recent years. And then this past year, Georgia Tech comes out and scores first and gives Georgia a game in the first half. And you're like, oh, yeah, this used to be an actual rivalry. And I think Brent Key, being a Georgia Tech guy, he knows what that's about. He knows he said something about we're going to work towards beating Georgia or something like that in his intro press conference. So, I think there's no reason Georgia Tech can't be a competitor in the ACC in the Coastal, right? I mean, there's there's obviously a talent base, and Brent Key, you know, he did a good job last year with the talent he had. So, you know, as a college football fan, I would love for that game to at least get to the point. Because remember, you know, in the Mark Richt era, you know, Georgia won most of those games, but a lot of them were close, like 31-17, 28-21.
Yeah, like Paul won a couple of times in Athens.
Yeah, so I, as a college football fan, I would love to see it kind of get back to that. And I think Brent Key, you know, with how he started and how he's kind of starting to build things there, I think he's got as good a shot as anybody.
Yeah, there just aren't a lot of living rooms where you've even seen the Georgia Tech coach, you know, waiting to get in. It's just a little bit of it. Like I said, I got no dog in the fight. Jed, appreciate it, brother. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Chuck. Anytime.
Jed May, talking Georgia football. It's supposed to be a factor to some degree. There have been times in modern days with color television, there have been times where it's been more than a factor. If you want to talk about, like, you know, I say all the time, there's this long, 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 giant brick wall that is college football history. And what gets a brick? There might be like half a brick. If you want to go back and see, like, go Google your computer, Bill Curry, Black Watch defense. It's worth finding out about. It's like maybe half a brick. And then there's, you know, there's a giant wall of all these other bricks. But Georgia Tech is supposed to be some sort of factor. There was a story, like Louisiana Tech is not supposed to be a factor. I'm put it this way. You know what get an LSU coach fired? Louisiana Tech being a factor. Tulane being a factor. Do you know part of what, like, Tennessee, it didn't take because it was bad on the field. Do you know what really got Tennessee fans looking at Derek Dooley and going, hey, man, Vanderbilt was a factor in recruiting. Vanderbilt football was a factor in-state recruiting in Tennessee. And I mentioned this before, is the running back who was a four-star running back is Mr. Football in Tennessee. He's like, yeah, I'm going to Vanderbilt. Derek, I need your parking card. Vanderbilt can't be a factor. That's not the relationship with Georgia and Georgia Tech. There was a year, I'm going to say this would have been, the signing day, February of 04, if I got that right. Yay me. And there were like five blue chip wide receiver recruits in the state of Georgia. Five of them. Georgia got four. Georgia Tech got Calvin Johnson. And do you know what that does? For a minute, it allows a Tech fan to go, ha! We got this guy. They almost beat Georgia in 04. Do you know how? End of the game, just throw it to Calvin. Kept getting pass interference calls. I bet you Georgia got called for three pass interference calls on Calvin Johnson in the fourth quarter. They're like, we can't cover him. Yeah, but he's a freshman. I don't drag him down. Do whatever you have to do. We can't cover him. That's Georgia Tech. You know what Georgia Tech is now? Stealing a wide receiver from, like, Valdosta State. Who was it, Brad Stewart, I'm trying to remember, or Georgia Southern, or there was a receiver who wound up, and this is not, he did something I never did, and most of us listening right now, he didn't do it either. There was a receiver, and I'm trying to remember, I think his name was Brad Stewart, and he wound up starting for like 3 years or playing a lot of football at wide receiver in the ACC for 3 years. And there are kids that are over-recruited and ranked wrong and everything, but just as a general measuring stick, I was like, I don't think that's where you're supposed to get your starter at wide receiver. Is a kid you flip from like a Southern Conference team or a Sun Belt team, or that's just not where a lot of other ACC schools go. And that's a factual statement. That's where you were. And I remember thinking, Calvin Johnson. Now, they didn't beat Georgia that year, but do you want to go back and look? Nan, do this real quick. Go back and look at Calvin Johnson's game. His breakout game was like week two or three or four of his freshman year. They were in Clemson. And there was a future NFL corner on him. Kid from Clemson, first round pick. And to win the game, they were like, you know what, Calvin, just run to that pylon and we'll throw it to you. And it worked. And then it worked again. And then it worked again. That makes you a factor. And Georgia Tech, when I say Vanderbilt, you can't be a factor when it comes to Tennessee and recruiting. I say the opposite. Georgia Tech, you're supposed to be a factor. You really are. If Louisiana Tech's a factor, that's a problem. If South Carolina is not a factor, if Kentucky's not a factor to Clemson, Louisville, that's a problem. Like Florida right now, I'm looking around going, dude, you need to be a problem. You need to be a threat. You need to be a factor when it comes to Tallahassee. Tallahassee's going, no, our biggest threat is Ohio State.
Megatron, it was week two, 2004, 8 catches, 127 yards, 3 touchdowns.
3 touchdowns.
Against Clemson.
He was 18, and that was week two? Hi, I'm 18. I've played one college game. Well, we're going to go ride you to victory on the road in the conference. And it was either Ty Hill, I think it was Ty, or Justin Miller, one of them. It's a future NFL corner. Grown man out there. He's like, I can't do anything with him. Calvin Johnson's playing against children. 8 catches, 3 touchdowns. And he's like, and literally, if you went back and watched it, like the first one was a route. Like they actually ran a pass route. I think this, honest, you go watch those final two. It was like, Calvin, pylon, I'll get it close. That was the play call. Calvin, pylon, I'll do something. I'll throw it up. Go be better in the corner. And Calvin's like, yeah, I got that. You're supposed to be a factor. And you're just not. So Brent Key, he is staring at a mountain or Stone Mountain or whatever you want to say is in front of him. So I would like I said, I didn't go to either place and I don't buy tickets or anything. I would like it to be a game. I would like to be gifted. I would like to be re-gifted this game every Thanksgiving weekend because I have lost it just like everybody else. All right, we break. Wrap up next.
To the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
I think Nick is never going to look away from the potential for explosive plays. He loves them like every coach does. And so if there's one of these two guys that can throw the football in a way that can maximize what they have at wide receiver, that guy's probably going to have a leg up because I don't think he wants to go back to 2016.
Travis Ryer, our friend. And who was Travis talking with? Braden Gall. I knew that. Braden Gall from Sirius and Athlons and 440. And he's talking with Braden Gall about the Alabama offense and about he's talking about the quarterbacks. He also needs to be talking about the coordinators, and I'm sure they did. But there is so much still to be determined. And Nick Saban does not appear to be in any particular hurry to check all these boxes. He'll get there, and it'll be just a wonderful, wonderful hire. But that's still what they are working on. So, again, that was Travis giving the lowdown on offense potentially at Alabama. And he was talking about Jalen Milroe or Ty Simpson or whomever else. But, again, ahead of spring practice and even before signing day is completed, there is a much bigger picture we're talking about. Dad, how's your Wednesday?
So far, pretty awesome. It's also, too, this time of the year is when coaches – the roster is set for now. That's not going to be the case a little bit later on. And I kind of, whenever I talk about the way that coaches handle their business, I kind of try to put my mindset in, what would I say as a coach? And one of them is, kid comes into your office, coach, I think I'm going to leave. I think I'm going to go somewhere else. The best thing that a coach can do, I think, is to try to be able to paint the picture for an 18, 19-year-old kid that they cannot see, and that obviously comes with age, that comes with wisdom, that comes with all those different types of things. And I think that the question that needs to be asked, and you say, you do the coaching tactic, leave and come back and give me your answer a little bit later, is do you see a path at the other place that you don't see here? Because are you necessarily looking at it from, hey, they don't have this guy, so immediately I'm going to be that guy? They might not have that guy right now. You know what the situation is here. You don't know what the situation is over there. And why necessarily is that place going to be even better for you? Because you might get some playing time. You're not going to fool the next level no matter what. They're going to know what type of player you are when you get your opportunity and how much of the opportunity you get. It's about what you make about it. It's don't think about what you have right now. Think about what you could have if you go about it the right way.
And there are still announcements that are just God's own private mystery. Spence Sanders, you think that there would be at least, more readily obvious choice for him, but he makes his, or Jake Garcia, or what was good enough last year is not good enough this year because maybe a kid's coming back. It can change in an instance, and whether it's the immediate, I want the cash grab now, which that's fine if it's your answer, or no, I'm going to take the high-level approach, the long range. What will best prepare me for the NFL in 4 years? Be your approach as well. Wraps it up on this Wednesday, folks. Back 22 hours from now. More College Football Conversation. Chuck Oliver Show.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
A lifetime of hard work. Children laughing in the kitchen. Family photos on a restaurant wall. A legacy that lives on. It all comes from the power of a conversation. Like the one Tommy Hall had with First Horizon Bank about taking over his father's Charleston-based restaurant business. Now the table is set for a whole new generation. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Tommy. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Hey Atlanta, Hudson Mason here. Is a new roof still on your to-do list, but you've been delayed due to rising home service costs? Well, here's a fantastic solution from Accent Roofing Service. Zero down, zero payments, and zero interest for a full year. That's right, you can get your new roof now and start paying next year. Act quickly because Accent's incredible offer of 000 with a 12-month deferred payment option for a lifetime roof system isn't going to last long. Contact the craftsman at Accent Roofing Service today, accentroofingservice.com.